Hey guys, Rich Outfield here. Before you listen to our new episode, we recorded it in early March, and it's taken me so long to edit it that a lot of the information in there is, I don't want to say that it's unimportant. I'm just reminded of that Saturday Night Live sketch where Sinead O'Connor says, "I can't believe you're talking about my hair when there's so much suffering in the world." The impact of the virus was not yet known to us when we recorded this, and because it took me so long to edit it, you will notice some of those references are dated. But that's what happens
when bodies start slapping.
Hopefully you can still enjoy. Thanks.
Podcasting, like bounty hunting, is a complicated profession. They said we were coming. They said we were the best in the parsec. They must be suffering from delusions of grandeur. The Journey Into podcast is proud to present this journey into a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. A journey into Star Wars. Hello there, everybody. This is Marshall Latham, and I'm here with Rish Outfield for another Delusions of Grandeur episode. It's been a while, Rish.
Yeah, this one a long time have I watched. All our lives have we looked away to the future, to the horizon. Never our minds on where we were. What we were doing. Yes, it's been a little while. We've tried to get together and do episodes a couple of times. I think I've pushed against it. I've just never felt like there was anything significant enough for us to talk about. And so we'll find out if I was right or wrong on this episode.
There's been a few developments, but yeah, we were pretty hot and heavy there while we were doing the Mandalorian episodes, because there was definitely a lot to talk about then. And then, of course, Rise of Skywalker came right on the heels of that, or actually right in the middle of that. So we had quite a busy end of the year there for those. But actually, we still have some lingering Mandalorian things to talk about.
Okay.
If our listeners remember, we played a voicemail from Bria Burton in the last episode, because she was really enjoying Mandalorian and wanted to talk about the seventh episode, the penultimate episode, where we didn't know the fate of Baby Yoda after that. So now that we've already talked about the last episode, Bria still had more to say after the Mandalorian was over. So I thought it'd be fun to listen to what Bria had to say and just kind of react, give our maybe our overall reactions again to Mandalorian, and then we can move on to something else.
Yeah, that works. Let's go.
All right. Well, I guess we should listen to Bria's email. Here we go.
Hi, Marshall and Rich. This is Bria. I would like to just say a few things about the final season one episode for The Mandalorian. First of all, I think I mentioned in my last voicemail that I was really concerned that they would potentially leave the child, I'm sorry, I'm just going to call him Baby Yoda throughout this, leave him where we don't know who has him. Like, that was really going to stress me out if they did that. So I was really pleased with the finale, because they almost immediately rescued him. And it was something I had talked to some friends about, and I didn't mention it when I called before, but I kept saying, like, where is IG-11? He's in the ship. Like, is he going to run out and shoot the stormtroopers and save Queel, or is Queel, do we know for sure that he's dead? And the episode definitively told us, yes, they buried him, and that was really sad. But they do make us care so much about these characters, and that's something we've had a little discussion on the Patreon comments about Rise of Skywalker and how it's like The Mandalorian is kind of eclipsing the movies at this point, because they make us care so much about the fate of these characters. And It's not like Quill was in every episode, but the very few episodes he was in, we really care about him. We get to know about him. So it's that much more devastating when he essentially dies a hero trying to save Baby Yoda. And so that opening where, I know I'm going to run out of time, but I'll call back. That opening where the two stormtroopers are just riffing, and my husband was like, whose voice is that? He recognized that it was a voice he knew, so we looked it up, and it was Jason Sudeikis, and that was pretty funny. And I was really upset when they were punching Baby Yoda. I mean, that was like, okay, somebody is going to need to take care of these guys. They can't get away with that. And so then, of course, in walks IG-11. And I couldn't help but have my little moment of like, okay, did he run that whole way? Like, how long are they waiting there? Because they just rode on their speeders, and it took them a while riding the blurgs to get from the ship to that place. But anyway, whatever, that's fine. He's there. So he takes care of it, and he really is the reformed nursemaid droid, which is just so delightful. And I really loved that IG-11 drove the speeder into town, because I thought, okay, he's going to take Baby Yoda back to the ship. They're going to have to run back and escape. But it was great when he came into town with Baby Yoda basically on his chest in a little sack. So that was wonderful. And then it's fraught with tension as they're getting whatever that, I don't even remember what they called it, the device that's going to incinerate the Mandalorian and Cara Dune and Greef Karga. So, like, they're trying to figure out if they're going to escape through the tunnel. They can't get it open. And just, gosh, all these little moments where Mando is injured and we get to see his face. I mean, I was wondering, are they going to show us, like, a private moment where he's by himself getting shaving or something? Like, that's what I thought maybe they would do to let us see his face. And I've talked to so many people who don't know the actor, but I've watched Game of Thrones, so I knew who he was. And they were like, his voice doesn't match his face. And I'm like, it's just Pablo, like I know him personally. But, you know, that was not a shocker or anything to see his face, because I knew what he looked like. But I just, that was a wonderful moment that, you know, no living thing has seen me, and IG-11 is not a living thing, so it works out for the audience. And then just the emotion between him and Kara as she's like, I'm not leaving you. And, oh, yeah, it was also powerful. I mean, I thought episode 7 was, like, the best episode, and then episode 8 even topped it. So as Rish had pointed out, the death of IG-11 is just epically fantastic. I mean, he goes out, talk about the sacrifice, you know, and it's very visually stunning and through the lava. And I can't say enough how much I enjoy this show and how I'm just dying to know where they're going to go next with what the armor told them about, you know, you need to find this baby's home, Baby Yoda's home. And so I just thought, oh, maybe that means we will learn more about the species that we don't even know what Yoda is called. So we can't even, maybe, and I kept thinking, maybe Mando will give the child a name, because she essentially commissioned him and said, you're his father now. You're his adopted father. So at some point, the label of the child can become whatever the name would be. And maybe on some adventure in season 2, we will see his homeworld, and maybe he'll figure out where he's from. Or I don't know, maybe it'll be some crazy twist that they are the only ones of their species. Their world maybe doesn't exist anymore. Who knows? But I'm excited for where they can take it. And just to briefly mention the villain, Moff Gideon is really, I think he's awesome as a villain. I heard, or maybe I saw something on Twitter, people talking about he's from Breaking Bad. I've never seen that show, but I've seen him on, he was the Magic Mirror, I believe, in Once Upon a Time. And I feel like I've seen him in a few other things. And he just seems like a fantastic actor and is doing a great job as a Star Wars villain. And there seems to be a lot of backstory we could learn about him. The fact that, oh, when Mando's got his jetpack, I mean, that was so awesome. That was an epic scene, too, where he's flying, fighting the TIE fighter, and he does get him. But, of course, we kind of knew he wasn't going to be dead when he crashed. And I don't really know anything about that, I guess, the dark saber. Maybe you guys will have some insight, but a friend of mine was talking about how they maybe talk about that on the Clone Wars TV show, which I have not seen. But since I have Disney Plus now, I want to watch all these things. Sorry, my son's playing with his toy. So I'm interested in, like, that his saber looks a little different, you know, than other lightsabers, and why does he have a lightsaber in the first place? So that's exciting to find answers to that. And of course, I'm glad Kara and Grief Karga are still, they survived. Like, they're still in the show, and potentially we'll be able to see them in the future. So, yeah, I imagine you guys are saying similar things as the episode comes out that you're talking about the finale. It's just fantastic. I can't get enough of it. I really can't get enough of Baby Yoda. I was actually at Disney Springs, which is, if you're familiar at all with Disney World here in Orlando, it's basically a giant shopping center slash it's got restaurants. Like, it's tons of restaurants and tons of shopping, and then all sorts of, like, Disney-specific shops. Like, they have a Star Wars shop, and they have a Marvel shop, and there's the biggest shopping place they have in there is called World of Disney, and that's even in the Star Wars shop they didn't have a lot of, like, barely anything with the Mandalorian, but maybe one shirt. And then in the World of Disney they had several things with the child. They had a couple shirts, they had some socks, which I did end up getting, and then they had some iPhone cases that I was so close, but they didn't have the size of my, I have an old iPhone SE, and they were all like the 6S and newer, the bigger sizes of the iPhone covers, but they were really cool looking. And so my husband had gotten me for Christmas the day after the first episode. He was wise enough to go online and see what was available, and he got this, it was an all black shirt and just has a picture of Baby Yoda, the child, you know, it doesn't say anything, it's just a picture of him on the shirt. And it's like a legit Star Wars, you know, Star Wars is on the tag and everything. So I'm walking around Disney Springs wearing this shirt, and it was pretty busy. It was, you know, a couple days ago, so right around New Year's. And a number of people that turned and looked, and then the number of people who asked me, "Where did you get that shirt?" It was a lot. So that was pretty fun just to know, like, yeah, I mean, which I knew, there's so many people that are just in love with this show. And so I had several people that stopped and commented, whether it was just, "I love your shirt," or I have one guy who was like, I gotta get that for my wife. Where'd you get that? Did you get that in here?" And I hadn't even seen any of the shirts yet. By the time that guy had asked me, I hadn't seen the shirts that they did have, which they did have two of them. They weren't the same as mine, but they had the child on them. So, anyway, it's just so interesting. But yeah, no plush toys, nothing like that. I'm sure when they do come out, they will just go really fast. So glad you guys are talking about this, because obviously it's just some of the best Star Wars stuff that's come out, and it's really fantastic. And I'm so pleased with Jon Favreau's vision for it all, and just how he's pulled it off, and just the inside jokes even. It's not, you don't have to necessarily know a ton about Star Wars, like people who probably never.
So that's it. It sounds like she got cut off one time too many.
Right.
Do you have a size of your voicemail? Like, does it ever say, you know, it's full?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never known if it's gotten full.
Well,
it just alerts me when somebody calls. But yeah, it has that 3-minute limit on it. So it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but it's still really cool when people call. And if you're listening and you'd like to participate in the conversation, it sounds like there's a third person in the room. So feel free to call. Give the number just right here at the top of the show.
Yes, Rish, that number is 77JN2107.
And like we've said in previous episodes, if you live in a different country or it's going to be too expensive to call the U.S., you can always just record your question or your comment and attach it to an email and send it to us, and we'll treat it as though it was a voicemail.
Right.
But thank you, Bria, for calling. I feel bad she got cut off there at the end, but I sort of tried to edit the calls together. But that was 3 calls or 4 calls?
four different calls.
See, that's dedication. So, that's really impressive to me. I had hoped that she'd call because she was really concerned there in between the seventh and eighth episodes of the show. And she had called and I said, well, call us after you see the last episode. And we didn't use it, but we're using it now. It's funny, though, how big a deal that show was when it was on.
Yeah.
And then it just ended, and it ended earlier than I think it probably should have. Maybe they would have been smart to do like five episodes and then take a break and then do five more episodes or something. But my nephew just today in March asked me, well, when's Mandalorian coming back? And I said, I think it's October, but I don't know.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, it's coming back in October.
And I wonder if they will do more than eight episodes in season two, or if they feel like that was the sweet spot, that was perfect, you know, for the story that we wanted to tell. I've no idea.
Yeah, hopefully they're basing that decision on the story itself, not on, hey, you did great with eight episodes, now you need to up that to 12 episodes.
Yeah, I would rather we get eight really good episodes than, you know, 12 and each one is a little slow.
Yeah.
Or padded or something.
Because with the Netflix Marvel shows, as much as I enjoyed a lot of those, it started to drag after 10, 11 episodes. And it depended on what was going on, but there was definitely some slow spots that they could have sped that up a little bit and cleaned it up a bit.
Yeah, we'll see. I imagine it's a ways off. In August, you and I will for sure find something out.
Yeah, for sure.
There. But it was neat to hear her talking. I mean, I know this is months ago that she left this message, but it brought some of that back to me. It made me want to sit down and watch Mandalorian again. Maybe I will try and do that before the season two begins. Just rewatch the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because... yeah, the part that she talked about that I thought was hilarious. Like, I mean, side-splittingly funny. The funniest Star Wars-related thing we'd ever seen was the abuse of the child by those biker scouts. And their
conversation.
Banter, their bickering, and you just want to look at it. I don't know why that was so funny to me, but I didn't recognize Jason Sudeikis' voice at the time. It was only afterward when I was just like, oh, okay, that's who that was. But boy, it was funny. Yeah. And I wonder, we talked about it when we reviewed the episode, but did you think that the abuse of the kid was excessive? Did it ruin the funniness when they were smacking it around?
I don't think it ruined the funniness, but it definitely put an edge to it a little bit. It's like, oh, and it just, you know, made you mad that they're hitting the child. So I think that also helped. You feel justified when IG-11 comes around and takes care of those guys. But, you know, with the target practice and all that kind of stuff, it was pretty funny.
How long has that been a running gag? If you had to guess, when was the first time that somebody pointed out how bad a shot stormtroopers were in the original trilogy?
I don't know if it was during the original trilogy time. Trying to remember if the Timothy Zahn books played with that at all or talked about that.
I don't know. I just remember at the dawn of the internet, somebody posted a picture, and it was a super grainy, pixelated picture of a stormtrooper missing Luke and Leia up on the Death Star Trench. And the caption, sorry, not Death Star Trench, what would you call that?
The causeway? I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. The Death Star causeway. And the caption below they had put was, only Imperial stormtroopers are so precise. And I just thought, oh, that's funny because they're missing. Sucks to get old, though. Anyway, yes, I would like to watch that again. One of the things that we thought about maybe talking about today was Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
And something that they did that I think is brilliant for Picard was... they showed the first three episodes in like an edited together movie version for like the premiere and...
oh, really? See, I didn't know that.
For reviewers and stuff like that, for the press. And Lucasfilm would be crazy not to do something like that for Mandalorian. Say, well, you know, you can pay, you know, $12 or whatever a movie costs to come see the first three episodes edited together like a movie, or you can wait 3 weeks and see it, you know, on Disney Plus. But it's just like suddenly they make an extra $100 million.
Right.
And I would thank them for taking my money. I wish that, did I talk about this in the episode? I wish that we had seen it in a theater when they revealed the child.
Yeah.
Just to hear what the audience would have been like, because nobody knew that was coming.
No.
And that it was a missed opportunity.
The problem with that would have been containing it, I think. If you had to wait 3 weeks after the premiere or whatever.
Well, you don't, you have to wait 3 weeks because it's three episodes.
Oh, I see.
So you could say,
okay,
you guys can watch the first episode for free, quote unquote, on Disney Plus today, or you can pay $12 to see the first three episodes in the theater.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. You're right. It would be, if it was long enough in advance, you couldn't keep that a secret. But let's talk about that for a minute, the whole Baby Yoda merchandising gaffe. I don't know how much I beat that horse.
We talked about it a little bit. But
I did read an article, I think it was in Forbes, that talked about how much money they feel that Hasbro lost not having the child merchandise for Christmas 2019. And I would say whatever number Forbes came up with, double that.
Yeah.
I know a guy, there's a toy store chain called Rogue Toys. It started out of Las Vegas. He's the guy they bring in on Pawn Stars when somebody brings a valuable toy in and wants it appraised. I talked to him, the guy that runs that, a couple of months ago, and they were bootlegging their own little 3¾-inch Baby Yodas. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Sorry. He knew people who were making unauthorized 3¾-inch Baby Yoda action figures. He told me that the people that were making them had a print run of 1,000. And they said, we want pre-orders for this, see who wants them. And that sold out in a day. So they're like, okay, we're going to up it to 5,000. And that had also sold out. And I think that's just a testament to how much money was left on the table over this.
Right.
But here we are in March. By the time this episode comes out, it's going to be nearly April. And there's still nothing. You go into the Disney store, you get a shirt with Baby Yoda on it. Maybe you'll get a hat with Baby Yoda on it. But there are no figurines. There are no cookie jars. There are no action figures. There are no costumes. There are no plushes. Nothing. And
But we've seen them, right? In videos.
We've seen that they are going to exist.
Right.
It sounds like it's going to be May the 4th that they release them all. That's the street date and all that.
Wow. But that's a long time.
And I understand the whole Jon Favreau wanted it kept a secret. So when I rail against the guy that lost his job over at Mattel for the Frozen merchandise not being in stores enough, and I say that somebody at Hasbro probably lost their job over that, people will be like, no, that was Jon Favreau's call.
Yeah.
Yes, but how many Mandalorian figures have you seen in a store? Or Mandalorian hats or t-shirts or anything you have seen? The answer is nothing. It's all still gone. That Hasbro was short-sighted enough not to ship entire cases of the main character of a Star Wars TV show that looks like Boba Fett to every single store and then ship 100 more cases the next month and 100 more cases the next month, that person should have been fired. And I have no doubt that they have been. The amount of money, I talked about it in the last episode, I know that was months ago, but $150 for a Mandalorian figure, a $20 Mandalorian figure sold on eBay. I feel great for my cousin who got that money, but there's no excuse for that. These are not vinyl cape Jawa figures made in 1978. This is stuff that's mass marketed that should have come out, that somebody somewhere should have said, hey, this figure came out really well. Let's make 100 times the 3 that we've currently got going to Disney store.
Well, and you know, who knows what their marketing was based on? I mean, were they saying, oh, look at all the stuff we put out for Solo and we lost all of our profit on that because nobody bought anything from Solo. And so they were just gun shy. I don't know what their marketing was telling them or what they were basing that on.
I hear you. I understand I've lost a bunch of money on Force Awakens merchandise and Last Jedi merchandise, and especially, well, by the time Solo came out, I wasn't buying Star Wars merchandise anymore, and so I didn't lose nearly as much on Solo as Hasbro did. Rogue One merchandise also. They overproduced it, and it didn't sell all that well. But they could have done an entire toy line of Mandalorian, and it would have sold out, you know, all of it. And they chose not to. I understand maybe they were skittish, but yeah, they've got to be kicking themselves now. And here we are all these months later, and it still hasn't hit stores. It feels like Christmas 1977 again.
Yeah.
Not that I remember Christmas 1977, but you hear the stories, and it's like, well, there's a record album. Okay, I'll buy that. There are posters. Okay, I'll buy that. I know a print shop that's making t-shirts with the Star Wars logo on it. Okay, I'll buy that. What else do you have? Nothing.
Well, and even Bria there talked about her husband got her one, but there was hardly anything at the Disney store when they were there at the park.
Yeah, I don't know what they should have done. If you could go back in time and redo it, maybe you can't have Baby Yoda on everything, but you certainly could have Mandalorian helmets and Mandalorian t-shirts and Mandalorian posters and Mandalorian guns and all of that stuff. I saw a Nerf Mandalorian gauntlet that shoots Nerf darts at Target the other day, and that was the first Mandalorian branded item I have seen. That's it. I just wanted to be silent for that to sink in.
Well, that's what I was, yeah. I was trying to think of other things, you know, that, like, was any of the Stormtrooper stuff new? Was that fire Stormtrooper that came in with the red shoulder or whatever, was that a new design that we hadn't seen before, or was there anything else that was unique?
He's from the video game, is it Star Wars Battlefront?
Oh, okay. We might have talked about that before.
Battlefront, I think, came out in 2016. And there was an action figure of him. He was a Walmart exclusive. He's a shock trooper. And in Hasbro's defense, they did reissue that guy in 2019.
Okay.
But it was just as common as the Mandalorian figure. It's like each store got one. Here you go. Hope this satiates people. I don't understand. I know that it takes a good long time to conceive of a toy and to make molds of it and then make the toy itself and then paint it and then package it and then get it over from China. But the second the news hit of how big a deal this Mandalorian show was after the first episode,
yeah,
they should have just stopped whatever they were building over, sorry, whatever they were making over there in China at the Hasbro plants and said, okay, we're just going to do Mandalorian figures for the next 3 days. Yeah, it would have taken a few months to get them, but we would have them by now. And maybe no stores would have them still.
Maybe, yeah.
But at least we would have had the chance. I feel bad about that because I'm a toy guy and the demand is there. And I don't know if the demand will be as crazy for season two as it would have been if they could have had him out for Christmas. And I'm not even talking about the child yet. We'll see what happens in May with the child. If it were me, I would say, okay, you know, what did we ship for Force Awakens in 2015? Okay, let's do twice that for the child.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What are the people that make the decisions? What are the people they have to answer to? The stockholders? What are they saying? The board of directors with Baby Yoda? Are they saying, you know, let's spend $100 million on these things and hope that we make billions back? Or should they be conservative about it?
Yeah, drive the demand up by keeping it scarce. I don't know.
But I don't understand that. I never understand how that helps the toy companies when they're like, oh, hey, I hear that Black Panther figure is going for $100 a piece on eBay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. That doesn't help their upfront sale.
Anyway.
Well, I was able to, broke down and bought a IG-11 action figure, so.
You got it from Best Buy?
I did, yeah.
And yeah, that's cool. I got one for my nephew. I told you that there was a case that they had all been damaged. And so I just opened them and sold them loose. because all the boxes were smashed. And not all Star Wars people have to have everything perfect. Some people like to pose them and play with them. The other thing that Bria mentioned that I wanted to talk about was she talked about Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah.
Now, did you watch Breaking Bad?
I didn't watch Breaking Bad, but I've seen him in other things.
He played Gus Fring in Breaking Bad. And the thing that I admired about his performance there is that most of his dialogue was in Spanish. But I could tell that he didn't actually speak Spanish, and he had memorized everything
really
phonetically. I was impressed by that because that's super hard. Because it's just gibberish to your ears, and you have to memorize gibberish with the right inflection or the, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I've always wondered about stuff like that, where somebody doesn't know the language. How do they know what their cue is? Do they have to memorize the other actor's dialogue? And how do you memorize something when you don't speak it? But yeah, he was a major, I guess you could say the major villain on that series. He was very smart and he was very, very cold. Yeah, you longed for him to get his comeuppance, and he was just too smart to fall for anything easy on that. And so, yeah, I saw him for the first time there. Can you think of what you have seen him on?
Well, unfortunately, it's a show I'm not a huge fan of, but he was the magic mirror on Once Upon a Time.
Oh, okay. Bria mentioned that.
Yeah.
So that's a recurring role. He was always on there, or?
He was always on there, yeah.
You talked about Once Upon a Time, I think, in your, was it Strewn Along the Path? What did you call those episodes where you would just talk about like your Netflix queue?
Like Netflix queue episodes, yeah.
Is that still on the air?
It's still up, but I haven't done an episode of that for a long time.
Oh, no, sorry. Is Once Upon a Time still on the air?
Oh, no. He was also, I guess I've seen him because we watched those movies, but he was in the Maze Runner movies as well.
Was he a bad guy in that?
No, he was a helpful, he was with the good guys, but he was kind of a badass guy, so.
Were those good? Is that something you would recommend?
I don't know. I liked the last one and the first one. The middle one, I didn't care for too much. You know, they're not Hunger Games level, but they're pretty good for a YA dystopian knockoff.
Well, I read the first book. And I was really frustrated by it because the book just ends and it asks all of these questions. Have you read the book?
I haven't read the book. Okay. No.
But I imagine that the movie is very, very similar, at least until the end, because the book just ends with your questions unanswered. And I think Dashner felt like, you know, if you've read all the way to the end, then you will follow him to the next book. But I was just angry about that. Because I felt like we had been promised answers.
Right.
And when they made it into a movie, it goes to the point that the book does, and then there's another scene where all our questions are answered. Like, they go into this place, and there's a recording. Is it a recording?
They find video footage of stuff that happened.
So I've only seen the ending of the movie. I've never seen the movie. But Patricia Clarkson comes on, and I guess she's the main villain, right?
Yes.
And she explains, like, here's what has become of the world, and this is why the maze exists, and this is what is going on. And I was just like, okay, why didn't the book have that? It's not like it tied everything up in a bow. It clearly there was more stuff going on after that, but it just...
Yeah, and it leads right into... I mean, you're kind of confused of what's going on, but... It does give you those answers, and then they're rushing off somewhere, and that's the end of the movie, if I remember correctly.
So, yeah, he was in that. An hour ago, I mentioned Giancarlo Esposito, and that's how we started talking about this, I guess.
Welcome to the Maze Runner podcast. The reason, you know, I mean, that Moff Gideon was a very compelling character. He had a presence about him that was really intriguing and demanded a lot of respect, even though at first I'm like, why is this guy just running into a firefight? But yeah, he's a force to be reckoned with, I guess. And now, like Bria said, and we talked about before, now the question is, where did he get the Darksaber and why does he have it? And they set that up really well for next season, I think, to learn more about him. Because he's only in those last two episodes, right?
Right. Yeah, see, I wonder how much they will explain the significance of the Darksaber and perhaps its connection to the Mandalorian people.
Yeah.
Surely they don't expect you to have watched the Clone Wars, but maybe they do.
Well, I think they were trying to do that thing where if you have seen it, you're blown away or you really appreciate that they're bringing that into continuity again. But if you haven't seen it, it's more of a mystery and you're wanting to learn more about it kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't matter whether you know what it is or not. It's so cool looking
yeah,
that you just go, oh, wow, even if you've never heard of that. Then, yeah, she speculated about, will we find out Yoda's species name and the homeworld? Will we see more of that people? And I wonder, do they want to run Mandalorian for 5, 6, 7 years? Or are they going to, do they have an end point already in mind? And if so, I don't know that you want to reveal Yoda's species and planet yet.
Yeah.
You can have him encounter other bad guys and have obstacles to overcome. And the ultimate goal is to find the world that this baby came from. But that's way, way down the line somewhere.
Yeah.
But maybe not. Maybe if they say, okay, you know, we're just going to do a second season and a third season, we'll tie it all up. You end the second season with finding out the name of the planet. And we know that the last season is going to be going to that world.
Right.
But I don't know. What do you think they should do? Is him finding the people that produced this child and delivering that child to them compelling enough to be the point of the rest of the series?
Yeah.
No. That's not rhetorical. I'm asking you what you think.
Well, I guess what I'm wondering is, would people watch The Mandalorian without Baby Yoda in it? Would they enjoy it as much? Or are those two characters balancing each other out? What is that special thing about the show? And it's definitely very, makes it fun to watch those two characters together. But if they find the child's home and bring him there and leave him there, and then that's the end of the season, then yeah, what would they do for the third season? So that might be a mistake to end that relationship. Or maybe they go to his home planet and the Mandalorian gets a whole other involvement with more of the species or the home world. Maybe he becomes the protector of that home world or something. You know, who knows? But yeah, if he just drops Baby Yoda off at his home world and then takes off again to go be alone in the stars, they might lose something, that part of that magic of the show. But maybe they would have developed other characters and relationships by then that would carry on.
Huh.
I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Well, I just wondered what you thought they should do, you know, as a creative person. If you were put in charge of it, I don't know. See, I would watch the show if the child were not on it, because I like the world enough and I like the other characters. But I wonder how many people would drop off. How many people are there for the child? And that's interesting. Like, for example, we talked briefly about giving Cara Dune her own show. Spin her off in her own show.
Right.
And I wonder, well, how many people would follow to a Cara Dune spin-off series? A lot of times when there's a spin-off of a popular show, you lose a bunch of people that don't want to follow Joey Tribbiani off of Friends.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Is it going to be a Frasier or is it going to be a Joey?
But because I love the world and any insights into the world and all that stuff, I'm willing to follow wherever they point. No, I also wonder, it seems like somebody asked Bob Iger at the premiere of Rise of Skywalker if they had any plans of doing films of The Mandalorian. And he said, we haven't ruled it out. Once the series has run its course, it seems like it might just be a natural progression to do a movie here and there. And that's smart. But yeah, I have no idea what their goals are, whether they say we're going to do 50 episodes and then it's done, we're going to do 20 episodes and then it's done, or if they're saying, yeah, if we do, 10 seasons, that's cool. It, as long as Disney will pay for it, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah. I have a feeling, though, that the home planet of the child would kind of be boring. I've never been on the ride. Maybe you have. But I just think of E.T. the ride, where I've heard tale and seen videos, where you go to E.T.'s home planet and there's Botanicus there.
You remember Botanicus?
Yeah, it's stuck in my mind. I don't know why I'm thinking that with Baby Yoda. Maybe because they're both small. But I don't know. Do you think it would be interesting, the home world?
Well, my thought is if it's a world like ours or worse, like Coruscant, and there's just millions of that species, yeah, it becomes less special. It becomes less cool.
Yeah.
But if they get to a planet and R2 says life signs are really, really sparse on this planet, there are structures on like this one continent and nowhere else, and they go there and there's like three people of Yoda's species on the whole world. There's just like few of these people that they remain special, they remain wise and rare. Then I think that you could maybe keep some of that. But that leads me to ask you, is the child an infant of Yoda's species? Or do you think that this is some kind of clone or reincarnation of Yoda himself?
I've heard those theories. I'm hoping it is a young member of the same species. And maybe they are unique and there's only so many that come out or that are possible to be born or created. Because, yeah, we don't... That's the other thing is we've never heard anything in the new movies. And I guess we maybe wouldn't if it wasn't directly involved with what was going on with the First Order and the Resistance. But we don't hear anything about the child or another Yoda out there or anything like that.
Well, do you know, you remember Yaddle from The Phantom Menace? She doesn't say anything. She doesn't do anything. There's a couple of shots of her. But I remember in 99 that being significant, that we saw another member of his species. Did they ever kill her off? Did they ever explain what happened to Yaddle?
I don't think we've seen her since Phantom Menace.
And is it possible that Yoda was the last of his species? That they were very, very long-lived, but there were three left, and then Yaddle is killed during the Clone Wars, and then Yoda dies 20 years later, and that's it. But, somebody somewhere has an infant, and it's just one of those, one of those terribly sad ideas like we have with the last white rhino, or we have like with the last, what were those coyotes in Australia called, that died in like the night? There's something so heartbreaking about those. Tasmanian tiger is, I think, what they might have called them. It's the dodo bird went extinct, and that's sad, but not nearly as sad as when there's one left in captivity.
Right.
And we know that when it dies, it's over. I don't know about you, but I went to this museum and they had a passenger pigeon there, a taxidermied one.
Mm-hmm.
And I cried when I saw it because they don't exist anymore. And we exterminated them. And it was just like a reminder of what people can do and how precious life can be, how at one time you could throw a rock and kill three. There were that many of them, and now there's none, and there will never be some again. And I feel like maybe Yoda's species is that precious. In which case, you know, we care all the more for the child.
And obviously they're very powerful as well in the Force.
And maybe that's why they were exterminated, or why there are so few now. These were Force-sensitive beings, and they lived forever. And powerful people said, we can't have that. We have to destroy any that we see. Because, you know, if any species is going to rise to the top of the food chain, it is those. I don't know. I guess I'm just making up story ideas as we talk. But that is so sad, the idea of, you know, when gone am I, the last of the Jedi, will you be? And then Luke is a Jedi like his father before him. And then, you know, eventually I guess he trains Jedi. I we didn't really see that. I don't know. You and I had talked about maybe doing an episode about the Colin Trevorrow Duel of the Fates script. And in that, Rey has started a Jedi training school. And we get the broom boy from the end of Last Jedi there, and, you know, other Force-sensitive children. And I think that that's a fascinating idea of, you know, a Jedi Academy kind of thing, or you know, we're going to have more. And we didn't get that in Rise of Skywalker. If anything, it seemed more fatalistic at the end, where she buries the lightsaber. Although, guess she had a yellow lightsaber now.
Yeah, she had her own.
But That was an interesting idea, and it just, it's something that Rian Johnson came up with in Last Jedi. I am not the last Jedi, Luke says, or I will not be, right? And then we see these kids, and it's just like, oh, wow, they're there, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
More are going to spring up. You can't stomp out the light. And then JJ comes back for the third movie, and it's just like, well, that's another thing that he's not interested in following up.
Yeah, where was the broom kid? That would be interesting to talk about that or some other thing. I don't know. I wonder what our audience would think.
Well, I feel like everybody has talked about it.
It has been talked about.
I've watched hours and hours on YouTube of people that have talked about the script or talked about other people's ideas of the script. Or there was the leaked concept art that came out. And I guess it was a Japanese Art of Star Wars book that Lucasfilm pulled.
Oh, really?
It didn't end up coming out. And I don't know if it will come out at some point in the future, but it's like, why wouldn't it have already come out?
Yeah, there was that one, and then there was the supposed, somebody came out and said they had intimate knowledge of J.J. Abrams while he was working on the set, and that he had fought for a lot of things to be included, but Lucasfilm wouldn't let him put it in and all this stuff. And at that point, I just kind of said, you know what? I'm not listening to this stuff anymore. You know, that might be true. I doubt it. And I'm sure there's always things that directors want that they don't get and things like that. But it just sounded like another attempt to say, see, JJ wanted to do everything, but that evil woman, Kathleen Kennedy, wouldn't let him do it, you know. So I kind of stopped listening to stuff about Rise of Skywalker. It wasn't a perfect film, but, you know, I wasn't going to sit and listen to everybody complain about everything or sit there and celebrate how it stomped on Rian Johnson's movie or anything like that. I just kind of stopped listening to stuff. But I did look at some of the Colin Trevorrow art because you had pointed it out to me. So I did look at that, and that looked pretty cool. But I had kind of checked out at that point.
Well, yes, a lot of it is really, really neat. But visually, Rise of Skywalker is super, super neat, too. And there have been a lot of arguments online about, you know, how great Duel of the Fates would have been and how much better than what we got it would have been. And it's so easy to say that.
Yeah.
To just say, I didn't like this, so this other thing would have been better. But we don't know. We could be in a parallel universe where Duel of the Fates came out, and then we found out that JJ wanted to come back for the third movie, and evil Kathleen Kennedy wouldn't let him. And these were the ideas that JJ had. And you're just like, oh my gosh, some of those sound so cool. Oh, wow. Really? Oh, and Han would have come back as like a ghost? Oh my gosh, really? What a waste.
And the Emperor? Yeah.
And I, in concept...
Look at all those Star Destroyers. We would have seen art of all those Star Destroyers and been like, holy cow, that would have been amazing.
And yes, I have not read the script, but I've heard people talk that have, and they went into the pros and the cons, and there were things I think worked really, really well. One of the things that I think was great was that Finn rallies a bunch of stormtroopers from the First Order to switch sides, and there is a stormtrooper rebellion that he incites. And I was just like, oh, that is so great. That feels like something that was always intended.
Right.
That he's a defecting stormtrooper, and he ends up convincing them to do as he did. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, inspiring others. Yeah.
But for every one of those things, there was something that didn't work so well, like the Poe-Rey romance and stuff like that, where I was just like, oh, okay. Who knows what the movie would have ended up being by the time it came out in 2019. And maybe they could have fixed some of those problems that the script had. I mean, it's always better to have more time than no time, like JJ did, I guess, on the movie. But I don't know. We could easily have had, you know, a movie that was problematic in other ways. And I don't know.
It's that's, I think, the most disappointing thing to me is that they... I mean, I don't know, you know, I know they had set the schedule, and if they delayed the schedule and waited a year or 6 months or whatever, would that have sent the wrong signals and people would have thought that it was going to be a bad movie from that. But to me, it seems like rushing it and just trying to do everything at breathneck speed just hampers a lot of things, and you have to take a lot of shortcuts. Then it's not as rich and full when you get the finished product.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of talk about that with No Time to Die. It got bumped, I think, 7 months from April up to November.
Yeah.
And I was really disappointed because I so wanted to see it. Oh my gosh, I've really enjoyed the Daniel Craig Bond films. But, you know, they said coronavirus, and I understand that, you know, like all the theaters in China. Italy are closed, and, you know, about
in China.
China is such a big market for movies now, you know, they felt like they would be shooting themselves in the foot, not being able to release it everywhere. But you have heard stirrings that that movie was problematic too, and
right.
That maybe giving them these extra months will enable them to fix some of the problems and sand some of the rough edges away. And if that's the case, always do that.
Yeah.
A better movie a few months later is better than a troubled movie, an imperfect movie on time.
Yeah, well, and I think that was another reason that Solo didn't come out as well as people would have liked. I mean, I enjoyed it quite a bit, but if you had given Ron Howard more time to get it done and put it out in December, like every other post-Disney acquisition of Star Wars movie came out in December, except for Solo. But I guess that was Bob Iger's push, that, and he said he regrets pushing for that schedule. But I don't know if that was just him taking the hit, or if that was really his demand for that. But I think it hurt Solo as well, not only in the finishing of that and the rush for it. Well, I guess it was bleeding cash as well, so that would have just made it bleed more. But they didn't get the marketing traction behind it, and people had just seen Last Jedi, and oh, what? There's another movie? So we've talked about that infinitum too. So,
well, it's hard not to talk about it, though. I mean, it's the only unsuccessful Star Wars movie in our lifetime. I don't count the Clone Wars movie, and I guess it was a perfect storm of events to make it fail the way that it did. I don't think it's just one thing, but yeah, I've always subscribed to the idea of, had it come out in December, it would have been a very different story. But we'll never know. And same thing with Duel of the Fates versus Rise of Skywalker. We'll never know whether the movie would have been better. We will never know whether the movie would have made more money had it come out in May of 2020 instead of December of 2019. You know, the Princess Leia had a lot to do in that script, in Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, And they wouldn't have been able to do that either.
There's no way to do any of that stuff. And that's one of the things that I was most pleased with, except for that one shot in Rise of Skywalker, is how they gave her important things to do in that movie. And I think we're probably spoiled that we get so much Star Wars all the time. So much so that you and I don't have enough time to talk about it all.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about, what is it called? The High Republic or something like that?
The new push for the publication, mostly in print. But yeah, the High Republic, which I think... And
is that this year or is that next year?
I think that's coming right up this year. I don't remember what they announced for a date. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be comics and novels and young adult novels and video games.
Well, listen, maybe one of us should go, or both of us, to that panel and we can talk a good deal about the High Republic with some knowledge behind it.
Some knowledge of it, yeah.
Because, yeah, I don't really know anything. I saw the concept art, and then I think I read like a one paragraph of what it was going to be about, and that was it. You know, I don't know anything about it. You had said maybe for this episode we'll talk about what I would do if I had to write something in that, but I don't know enough to talk about it.
Yeah.
If you said, what would you do in the second season of Mandalorian, I could answer that question, but High Republic is just a blank slate, as far as I know. People could do anything.
Well, I think that's the point. You know, it's like, we're so tired of getting beat over about what we're doing with these beloved Star Wars characters. They're like, let's get out of that and let's make up these whole new characters 1,000 years before Phantom Menace or anything that we know. And it does. It gives them more freedom to come up with characters, and they're not tied to anything. And so I'm sure it's pretty liberating to work in that space.
Well, at the same time, somebody needs to oversee all of it. Somebody needs to have the authority to say, I like this idea. I'm sorry, I have to veto that idea because it conflicts with what this writer is going to do or what this person is going to do next year and all that. I hope that they have 2 or 3 people who take it really seriously and are super passionate about it. If so, the sky is the limit. You could, you know, as popular as Ahsoka Tano is, or I'm trying to think of other non-movie characters that people love. Dr. Aphra is a great example of it. People just love that character. What's the name of the bald Sith chick?
Oh,
I want to say it starts with an O.
Asajj Ventress?
Yeah, there's not a single O in there, is there?
No.
I know people that love her. And I'd like to love her. I just don't know her. But yeah, I've no doubt that if creative people are passionate about what they're doing on High Republic, that there will be superstars that break out. There will be people that want a tattoo of so-and-so character. Children will dress as so-and-so for Halloween. And that's great. You can take these characters in any direction. And there is a lightness to a character that we haven't known all our lives. And every single person knows what their voice sounds like and all that stuff. Where you can just do whatever you want for them. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody at this very first meeting said, what if we turn so-and-so to the dark side, but not right now, in like 3 years? And they're like, yes. Did everybody hear that? Okay, plant little seeds of that in all of your books. And in 2024, so-and-so will turn to the dark side. that kind of thing, where you have that kind of freedom. And then also, because it's not a movie, I think that the pressure is going to be way less on these writers.
Yeah.
The spotlight is not going to be nearly as blinding and hot as a spotlight on J.J. Abrams or Rian Johnson.
Yeah.
But
and they can work together to, oh, you're working on that comic? Oh, well, I'm going to put this in the novel. Can you do something with that in the comic book or something like that? So I've thought about whether I want to grab those comics or not, but I was getting Dr. Aphra there for a while and reading that. Then that series ended. They just started a new series of Dr. Aphra, and I decided I wasn't going to continue with that. So I don't know what I'll do, if I'll read those Because I'm assuming it's all going to be connected, so will I enjoy the comics if I don't read the novels? So there's always that kind of stuff going on. But at least it's not as annoying as, oh, we didn't have that in the movie, but if you read this novel, you'll understand that character a little bit more, like General Grievous or something like that.
Well, that's something that we need to keep in mind. I'll probably give the first book a chance. But even if we don't, if somebody is listening and they're super excited about the video game or super excited about the comics or whatever, feel free to volunteer to be our reporter on the scene that gives that comes on the show and tells us all about those comics.
Yeah, true.
Because maybe we'll want to buy them, or maybe we'll be glad that we didn't. We can't do everything. I'm not a video game guy, unfortunately. But, you know, that...
Jedi Fallen Order is the name of that.
Fallen Order. Right. And I've seen the previews for that, like the trailer, I guess you'd call it. And it looks really solid. But I don't have a PS4 or an Xbox One, so...
Me neither.
But anyway, if somebody out there has played the game, feel free to tell us that you want to talk about the game and what's great about it or what's not. And there we got more content for the show. I'd like to do more of these. It's just there's not enough hours in the day.
Yep.
One last thing. I don't remember if I said that I was going to do this in the last episode, but I'm going to include a like 30-second clip from the sketch that I wrote that we can release in the next episode, just so people hold me to it.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
I feel like we did this once before and it helped me say, okay, I have to do it now.
Right. If you tease the audience, then you have to give them something.
Well, my place is here. The battle station is very important. Thank you, Bast. I'll take that as a compliment.
Papa, what's that sound?
That breathing. The Dark Lord is coming. Stop slouching, Larissa.
Chief Admiral, I am looking for General Tag.
He's not yet returned from Dantooine. 2 more days, his report said.
Why are these children here?
If you must know, Lord Vader, it's because it's Bring Your Daughter to Work Day.
I must have missed the memo.
So that is called Daughter Death Star Day. And it is about Bring Your Daughter to Work Day on the Death Star. And so we'll put that in the next episode. I'm almost out of time on my recorder, so I figure it was time to wrap up. What do you think?
Yes, we can talk about the adventures of Wat Tambor.
Wait, Jeffrey Tambor, the star of Arrested Development?
No, Wat Tambor.
Is Wat Tambor the blue-skinned guy that was in the Senate that was... Who is Wat Tambor?
No, he was part of the meeting of the guilds in
the
Attack
worst
of the Clones.
Scene in the whole second movie. That's him. Oh,
yes, where he modulates his voice and goes... Ooh.
That's him, Wat Tambor. What's the name of the guy I'm thinking of that says, order, order, the Senate will come to order. And there's this deleted scene in episode 2 where he sticks out his tongue and it's a 3-foot tongue and it is horrifying.
Oh, really? I can't think of the guy's name.
Okay, well, somebody knows his name.
There's a scene of him when he get with Order 66, right?
Oh, is there? Is he in on Order 66?
Well, I think he gets killed. That's part one of the scenes. If he's the same guy I'm thinking of. Yeah, and one of these times I wanted to do a Star Wars trivia with you. Challenge you on your knowledge of Star Wars.
You would come up with the questions, or would it be better if the listeners supplied the questions and we had to both answer them?
That might work too.
Did you pull Wat Tambor out of your brain? Did you just know that?
Well, I started to watch the new season of Clone Wars, and he's in the 3rd episode.
Okay, well, there's another thing we can talk about in a future episode.
Yeah.
How many episodes of the last season are there?
There's only been 3 so far.
No, but how many are there going to be?
I'm not sure how many there are going to be.
Okay, well...
I would guess around 12 or something like that.
When that's done, maybe we can do an episode where you can just tell me about this episode was so good and, oh, you know, this episode... Or maybe they were all so good. But yeah, I would really like to hear about that. I did talk about the...
Right, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Ahsoka Tano clip that I saw at last year's celebration and that I cried even though I don't know who Ahsoka Tano is, and I don't give a crap about Anakin Skywalker. It just, yeah, it was that well done.
So, yeah, we can definitely talk about that.
Okay, well, thank you once again for wasting your evening with me, Marshall Latham. And for whoever is listening at home, feel free to support either or both of us. I said either like Big Anklevich does, because I'm from California. We both have Patreons. patreon.com/journeyinto and patreon.com/rishoutfield. It just helps us feel motivated to put out more content.
For sure. Thank you, everybody, and have a good night. May the Force be with you.
Hey, and you too.
Wat Tambor. Confectionarian Wilro Hood said you were coming. He told me your show was the best, that you cut out 5 minutes of arms in every episode. Forgive me if I am a bit skeptical. They say that it is done under a Creative Commons 3.0 license, that one can download it, listen, and share it, but not sell it or claim the files for oneself. I hear podcasting is a complicated profession. Don't you agree?
People who probably never...
Was that it?
Yeah, that was it.
So she didn't ever get to sign off or anything?
She didn't. She probably figured, oh, 5 times, I'm not going to call back one more time.
Okay, well, I feel like it would have been better if we'd paused it every time she brought something up and then addressed it.
Oh, probably.
Now, I don't know if I'll remember all the things that she said that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, shoot.
I mentioned Giancarlo Esposito. I'm looking over his filmography, and I haven't seen most of these things. There was this movie Monkey Bone that came out in 2001, and that was during the time when I was in LA, and I worked on the Fox lot. I worked for the FX network that year, and guess what happened to me? Yes, fired. And there were all these guys dressed as, I thought that they were ghosts, and they were walking around the Fox lot, and I had the little electric golf cart that I was driving around, and I stopped, and I was just like, what is this? This is so cool. And they said, we are lost souls from the movie Monkey Bone. And I was like, they're not really going to call it that, are they? Monkey Bone? And yeah, nobody remembers that, but that movie, but it, Giancarlo Esposito was in that.
Was that with animation as well?
I feel like it was live action with Brendan Fraser in it.
Yeah.
But the Monkey Bone character, I think, was a CG animated.
Yeah. Okay, I kind of remember. I don't know if I watched the movie, but I remember seeing that before.
Anyway, sorry, I shouldn't have just gone through and it's like, let's talk about Monkey Bone for a second. Start with the video game that just came out.
Oh, what is it?
It's not Jedi Outcast. How have I already forgotten what it's called?
Yeah, I'm interested in that little droid that rides with him.
Oh, I should send you one. There is a figure of the guy, the main character. I want to say his name is Cal Kestis or something like that. And he comes with the little droid.
Jedi Fallen Order is the name of that.
Fallen Order.